Radio Gorgeous supports women. Women support Radio Gorgeous. RadioGorgeous.com. So, here I am in the Radio Gorgeous kitchen. I've got Florence Knight coming round, who's now turned into a bit of a superstar this summer. She's a chef who works at Polpetto in Soho. She's got a fab figure and she looks gorgeous. So we've really got to find out how she maintains it all while she's got the tasting spoon in hand. And also her book is called One. And what she's done is it's called A Cook and Her Cupboard. In fact, here she is. I'm going to answer the door now. So Florence has arrived. It's really exciting. We all know that pizza comes from Naples, spaghetti bolognese from Bologna, but what comes from Venice? And it's a dish called cicchetta, is that right?
Yeah, cicchetti's this huge thing there. It's a great... What I love about it is it just brings everybody, all walks of life, from the postman to the priest to the builders to the mums, in everyone just stands, they have a nibble of all these lovely things on the bar, freshly made, maybe a little glass of wine, and then they just go off back to work and or whatever they have to do.
So it's like sort of antipasti in a bar and you just have a kind of nibble.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Any time of day, can it be?
Yes, and so it goes on all the way through the evening, and it's really sociable. It's a case of, you know, you're not going to be sitting down at a table and be getting a full main course, but you just get exactly what you want, and you get a little, you know, a little glass of something if you fancy it or if you don't, and it's really nice. And I think it's a real neighbourhood thing. You know, everyone comes in and talks and chats, and it's
lovely. This is the idea. This is the where you're a chef, and I want to say, are you a chef or a cook?
I would say I'm a chef, but only because obviously I've worked in kitchens since I was 19, working up, and so. But you know, cook. Yeah. Same thing, yeah. Really.
Okay, so you're a chef and you work in Polpetto, it's called. And these are a kind of unique, I don't want to say the word chain, but they're owned by the same two guys. And they're like, they exploded in Soho over the past few years. And the whole idea was to eat. You know, the whole idea is they went to Venice, they were inspired, weren't they? Mm. Having these little nibbles. And they thought, let's go back to London and do that.
Yeah, I mean, Russell is, I would actually say he's a real pioneer of the restaurant business. I mean, he was a magpie. He took design ideas from New York, the feeling of that buzziness of New York, that loudness of music, that darkness, all that kind of sexy atmosphere that he loved, and put it with this simple dining of small plates, which is incredibly sociable.
Because everyone shares them. You don't just sort of go in and say, oh, I'll just have one, and then that's it. It's you make joint decisions and you chat about the food.
I think Russell and I would love the concept of a cicchetta bar to actually work in London, but we're still unsure how... It's just incredibly European, and I don't think we're quite there yet.
So how do you do it in a restaurant, then?
So the restaurant, in the sense, it's small plates, it's very relaxed dining in a really fun environment, and it's just simple, great seasonal food. Not complicated, not fussy at all. And it's all about having lots of different things and trying and eating and being together.
Now, I was going to say, you are working, it's Italian food, and your book's Italian. I mean, is that your great love, Italian food?
I am classically French trained as a chef, that's my background, and worked in, you know, with Raymond Blanc and Richard Berthenay, both French chefs. And bakers. And then throughout my career, it's funny actually, as a chef, you spend your life being told what to do by other people. And then when you get the opportunity to be a head chef, you have to find what is you. And that's when you have to really go, okay, what is my style? What is my cooking? And the natural side of me is a slightly more relaxed approach, a gentle approach, which naturally goes towards Italian food. I love making pasta and all these things. I wouldn't say that my food is Italian. It takes inspiration from Italian, but there's still, you know, I love olive oil, but I do still use butter. And I would say I'm a magpie. I like to take bits and pieces, but I live in London and grown up in England, and so it's all about seasonal good food that is around me. I don't try and import tons of things for the sake of it.
So you'd be using blackberries at the moment?
Yeah, totally. Mm. And, you know, perhaps I might make a panna cotta and the blackberries are with it, but it's working with what we have, because I think that's really important.
So I know it's rude to talk about your sex, but you are a woman. But yes, we are Radio Gorgeous, so we can. Now, I mean, you are a woman, you are pretty, you're petite as well. So how was it, in, you know, working your way up in those very sexist male kitchens?
I'm 5'2", but I'm from a family of five with a lot of banter, a lot of jokes. It's kind of similar to being in a big rowdy kitchen. You have to hold your own. You have to be quite bossy. You have to be quite domineering, and you have to be able to take a joke. And those kitchens to me, they were quite similar, so it wasn't too daunting. Obviously, I really enjoy male company, I must admit, and I've spent a lot of time with men, and they're very straightforward, you know. That can be really great. Mm-hmm. You just say no, that's not good enough, and you know, we might have a spat, but it's just over, and it's right. I quite enjoy that. Yeah. But obviously, there's jokes and sexual banter and stuff, but I've never found it too much. And I do think that once I've got that chef white on that's big and baggy and my hair in French plaits tied tight back, it's kind of, you're just invisible. It's what you can put on the plate. It's not necessarily whether I'm a girl or a boy or whatever.
So you go into a kind of different state mentally when you get out there, sort of in the kitchen?
Yeah, I mean, I love clothes. I love makeup. I don't stop thinking. I'm not like, because I work in a kitchen, I can't enjoy all those lovely, lovely things that we as women can have and enjoy, because they're part of who I am. You know, so but yes, I'm very different in the kitchen. The hair is scraped back, mm-hmm. and I've got quite a lot of hair. It's tied back tight, and I'm wearing baggy clothes. You can't tell anything. And
so you're the boss.
Mm.
You said you're 5'2". I mean, do you do all the shouting? Like we see on telly people doing.
There's, you know what? They joke and say I'm a bit of a credible Hulk. I mean, I don't lose my temper, and then I really lose my temper. So I think it's kind of more valued when I do. It's not like I don't go round swearing non-stop or whatever, but I just, that when I do, everybody knows that it's not time to cross my path. But you have to be firm, and you have to be respectful, and there's no job I wouldn't do that any of the other chefs wouldn't do. I think in leading by example is so important to me in a kitchen, and you know, treating them a bit like a family. You know, if they don't do something, I'm really disappointed. I am generally very disappointed in somebody when they let me down, they don't turn up or whatever. So it is kind of like this little family I have that I have to look after and make sure.
So that's quite nice, actually. That's quite maternal, isn't it?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think most women in kitchens soften the kitchen slightly.
The atmosphere.
It's not all kind of like, ah, gorilla, let's all beat our chests, who's best. It just kind of soften it. They're able to take the mickey out of the boys as well, and just bring them down a few pegs if someone's being a bit too cocky. And I think that's important. If you've got to work as a team in a kitchen, because quite often things go wrong, and they just do, and you have to be able to up your game and be there when someone else needs a hand. It's kind of, I'd describe it slightly as being in an army. You need to be a strong team. You need to know each other's strengths and know each other's when they need help. And you need to be able to not have enough pride to say, look, I really need help here. I'm not coping, so that you can jump in services especially.
So you do the actual, you do like actual cooking as well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I get a huge buzz out of it. It's a massive adrenaline kick. It took me a long time to kind of come down from that adrenaline. When I was writing the book, it was just so quiet in comparison to being in a full-on rowdy kitchen.
So how do you unwind after? What time do you finish?
I think partly, well, it's normally about 1:30, mm-hmm. Depending. But I definitely would say that possibly it's a female thing. I do have to get it out. I have to talk it out to somebody, to talk out my day, just kind of have those rants.
Wow.
Who's done this? Who's done that?
Yeah.
And I have to force someone to listen, whether it's my mother at the end of the phone who's trying to sleep, or my husband, or, you know, that doesn't care and just wants to go to sleep. But I feel it's best out than in, because I'm a huge perfectionist and a massive worrier. So if I don't let go of those things, then I'll just carry them up and I'll feel more and more stressed.
And then would you have a bath at home? Would you read? How would you kind of come down?
Bath, I mean, ideally walking's quite good, so that even that short walk now that I live in Soho just helps just clear the head. Baths, music, just trying to really focus out of it is really important. Or reading is good as well.
Yeah, your head goes out. So you devise a new dish and you sit, I mean, I suppose you talk about menus of everybody, but then you devise a new dish and then do you all cook different parts of it?
My team's quite small, so when we're cooking, it's more, it's not like, there's not tons of different hands touching the food, like similarly in Michelin stars. No, there's no tweezers, for example, in my kitchen, which always make me laugh. But no, it's very much quite a simple process. The beginning of it is all inspired by one ingredient. So that one ingredient, whether it's the text from my fish guy saying what he's caught that night, or my vegetable guy writes me a monthly report of what's going on. And then I just generally get inspired by that one ingredient and go, oh God, I need to do this. And I'll play around. I'll cook something in the kitchen. We'll eat it together. It's really important to me to eat it in the dining room, so you get the whole experience of what it's like in the dining room, and get other people's opinions, because it's not all about me. And food is very, it's one of those things that everybody's like art. Everybody has an opinion. And sometimes it's not good, and sometimes, you know, and you have to.
What happens if, like, five people say yes and three say no or something?
Well, it all depends. They say, oh, perhaps it's a bit too salty or something. Yeah, you think, okay, well, then maybe I could lessen that. Or, you know, maybe someone might say, oh, it needs a bit more of a texture, of a crunch. And so obviously, at the end of the day, it's obviously my menu and my food. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not that I don't listen, because of course I listen. But if it's kind of that kind of odds, I'll go with what I believe and fiddle around a bit more, tinker around a bit more until I believe it's perfect.
This is Radio Gorgeous. Let's go on to, because before you came, I thought, well, I'd already read the book, obviously. But I thought, I remember what Florence specialises in. It's called One, because you take one ingredient particularly. Now, I thought, well, I'll have a look around the Radio Gorgeous kitchen. Amazingly, I have all these products and we are sitting by them now. So I thought olive oil, we'd just do a little tasting and you can say why. We won't do all of them. In fact, you can choose, but we'll do olive oil first, because I know that that is your absolute favourite thing. This olive oil is from Puglia. It's an everyday olive oil. It's from the Olive Grove, Radio Gorgeous Olive Grove.
Fabulous.
So I just want you to say what you think of it. They say that it's extra virgin, but I can't believe them, because I didn't know extra virgin could be yellow.
It's rather lovely though, isn't it? It's got a
How would you describe it? Just a bit more.
It's very rich. I'd say the first thing you get, and but quite mellow. And there's actually quite a lot of pepperiness at the end. That's what I'd say. So, but it's quite a quick pepperiness. So you get the pepper and then it just mellows down, which is really lovely, actually.
Because I find that I use this for everything now.
I mean, we often have this debate in kitchens about using olive oil from the beginning to the end of a dish, and how people feel about it. Obviously, if it's very expensive olive oil, people feel like if you're cooking it above a certain temperature, you're ruining all those amazing. But I think cooking with a good everyday.
Yeah, because that's what I think of this as, you know, because it's yellow, it's not heavy, you know. I even use it for curries now. Before, I used to have a separate one for curries, and then I thought, to hell with it, and it's actually worked fine.
No, I mean, I'm a huge fan of olive oil. I even use it on my hair and all kinds of things.
Something good. Oh, something good. Oh, something good. Oh, something good tonight. Make me forget about you for now. Get high, hit the floor. something goes. Oh, something goes. Oh, something goes. Oh, something good tonight. Make me forget about you.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah. I'm here with Florence Knight, who's written this marvellous book called One, and she takes one ingredient, and we're now going to look at salt. So what is it about salt? I mean, I just thought you could buy, you know, salt. What's special? What would you do?
There's so many different types of salt. I'm a big fan. You've got a lovely Cornish salt over here, which I'm a big fan of. And obviously, chefs are slightly in love with the whole Maldon salt. I think it's partly because it's huge, nice, big crystals. You can kind of crunch them over the dish at the end, and they're not too overpowering. Grey salt's really lovely. It's very natural. Got a quite a minerally taste to it, which is quite different. And obviously, you've got the more basic table salt. But there's so much you can do with it. It's not just a pinch in at the end or at the beginning. You can bake a whole fish in it, or make a lovely salt encrusted round some lamb. So you pop it open and all this amazing steam and juices, and it really helps keep all that moisture and intensifies the flavour of whatever you're cooking. And in salted caramels, it's absolutely delicious.
Do you think people are scared of seasoning in Britain?
I mean, I think it's very old-fashioned, that kind of thing of boiling vegetables to death with no seasoning, which is just kind of hideous, and you think, oh, I really can't eat this, you know. I think it's getting more and more better. I definitely do like salt. I mean, I would admit that I would eat salt. Just raw.
Go on, have some now.
But it's partly because I think I'm generally quite often dehydrated, and it's really great for that. But I mean, I love it.
It's a totally natural product, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it really is.
And I've really noticed, again, in Italy, they season things so much more than here.
Well, I think, again, that's part... It's the climate, isn't it? I mean, when you're hot, you're sweating a lot. And your body needs that salt. It's really actually important. I mean, I'd find after services and being hot and being busy, I'd suffer really badly from dehydration and stuff. And a pinch of salt and a lemon in my water would just clear my head and help everything.
Wow, that's a really good tip.
I think it's very similar to kind of those diurolytes that lift you up. But yeah, no, there's so much more to all these ingredients that we all have. And that's what I hope to achieve. I hope to get people thinking. I mean, salt, for me, you know, you can cure with it. You can bake with it. You can do so much. And it's wonderful to make that kind of balance when you eat something sweet. But you just get a little bit, you know, now you see quite a lot of chocolate with salt and stuff in it. And it just kind of changes things a little bit.
Would that be sweet and sour then?
Yeah. I would say it's definitely a flavour I really love. I mean, you know, you see this salt and sweetie popcorn that's like everywhere now, don't you?
And do you always buy it?
I must admit, it is one of my favourite things to eat.
Yeah, because someone told me that worked in a restaurant, she said, actually, sometimes when you've been cooking all night, that's food, you can't eat it at the end. She said, and often you just stop at a service station and get like a bag of crisps.
It's really, it's very unhealthy, like, lifestyle. You just basically, I mean, you taste so much, so you kind of constantly feel a bit, oh, you've had all kind of weird things, from some raw fish to something else, a sort of pudding. So you kind of end up a bit like, oof, I just can't face it. So toast is one of those good things handy. My fridge always has cured meats, so I can just have nibble, and Parmesan. Because the other thing is just being the stable things, they don't really go off. So if you're not round much, you know you can just go and you can have something to graze on that's not going to be mouldy in your fridge.
So when you get home late at night, you have a piece of toast and
And yogurts and things like that.
Funny about it. I suppose sometimes I find if I've cooked a meal, I'm really excited about it, but then I don't enjoy it as much as everybody else. Is that because I've smelt it and tasted it all the way
through? Yeah, I think so. And I think, but cooking at home, I'm really different. I I try to be very disciplined to cook something that's so simple that it is like a tray in and a tray out. Because once I start doing pan work, I just go into this service mode and I'll clear down. Everyone will have their food and I'll make theirs all lovely and I'll end up this scrappy, cold thing that's like the end of the pan. And they will all finish and I'll still be cleaning and everyone will just be like, why can't you relax? But it's hard.
Yeah. So you try. I love it. So you do have two characters. It's fantastic. Now, what should we try next? I mean, it's incredible. You've got tomato ketchup is one of the things on your list, which made me laugh. I mean, people must have laughed at that.
Yeah, I think it was a challenge. I kind of set myself this huge challenge because, I mean, obviously, the concept of one was what I was doing in Polpetto. So it was working daily with whatever inspired me. And this was taking it right back and going, look, I'm not saying you have anything fancy. I'm saying the basic things that people have, like you had in your cupboards.
Yeah, I've got them all.
And yeah. And that's why it's so exciting, because you can make great things beginning with these things. And it's, you know, ketchup, we obviously see it regularly with something quite fatty and greasy, like fish and chips, sausages, whatever. So for me, I have to get my head round thinking, okay, well, it's, you know, it's that sweet and sour. It's quite strong. So to balance it out, I had to think of things that perhaps were slightly smoky in flavour or quite rich. For example, chocolate works very well with ketchup, and I didn't think it would, but it does.
What do you make with it?
There's little chocolate pots in the ketchup section, which are great, and you wouldn't be able to taste. You wouldn't be able to go, oh my God, it's kind of like you eat them and you go, gosh, what is that? It kind of brings out a berryness in the chocolate.
There's a roundness to the taste.
Yeah. Kind of you suck your cheeks in a little bit and kind of pull your, because of the sourness, but you can't quite identify what it is. And I actually really like that. It works really well. There's a beetroot and chocolate cake. I'd say the thing with chocolate, which is quite unusual, is the flavour develops more and more. So say you went to eat the cake until a couple of days, then it would taste incredibly ketchup-y. But at the beginning, it would be barely tasty.
Maybe because it's a preservative.
Yeah. You know? Mm. Yeah. But no, it worked really well in tons of things, you know, added. And when you think about it, it's got often added into mayonnaise to make Mary Rose.
Yeah.
And it cuts through that fat in there.
Yeah, so whenever I make any tomato sauce, I always put a squirt in, you know. Just for tartness, sweetness, all the things. Yeah.
Exactly. So it was an exciting project. And at the beginning, I thought, oh, God, what have I done? But and I was just like, oh, no. But then once I got my head round actually what it achieves in day-to-day normal cooking, it can just do that in slightly different dishes.
What about honey?
No.
The one I've got here is just a co-op one.
Yeah, well, any honey is
but
great.
It's nice because it's a single flower, which I think makes a difference, don't you? Love a little bit.
Yeah, I absolutely adore honey.
It's Mexican orange blossom honey.
It's lovely. Mm. It's got a really floral note. It's quite light. And then actually the flowers really come through at the end, I would say. The thing with honey is it works really well also in savoury things. And I think that's why I just want to stop people from feeling like it's not just this thing we put on a piece of toast in the morning. It's a lot more. With honey, I played around with it and roasted radishes in honey, grapes to go with dishes, lovely panna cottas with honey rather than using sugar. And you have to remember it's a natural sweetener. And you can't make better than that. You know, these bees have worked so hard to make us something magical.
You don't find it burns easily, do you?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I must admit, though, I don't think I cooked with it. I mean, I make a hokey pokey, which is basically honeycomb, delicious honeycomb, and I do a honey hokey pokey in the book, which is fabulous. You have to be slightly more careful with it burning in that dish. It's definitely not a problem you can't get past.
Yeah, fabulous. So I've also got balsamic vinegar. This one is this is from Italy again, but I've seen them in the shops here. But it's like a glaze. I find it's just like today, I just had tomatoes and avocado and basil leaves. And then added salt and a bit of balsamic. And the balsamic really gave it the flavour.
It's delicious. It's really dark and rich, quite sweet. Would work really well, like you said, just very simply. You can cook with balsamic. I do know that Sky makes a delicious mayonnaise, actually, with balsamic, a reduction of a balsamic similar to this. And she makes a really nice, rich, kind of caramelised-y mayo with it. The vinegars I use in the book are quite often, one of my absolute loves is Muscatel, which is a very, it hasn't got that sourness that some vinegars are just so harsh that I would only really use them to, like, you know, clean the lime scale out of my kettle or all my cups or, you know, my windows, but I wouldn't necessarily use them for cooking. But Muscatel's very rich, very sweet, almost honey flavour, so it's not overly strong. But pickling is something I love doing.
Pickling,
everything. I like pickling things like gooseberries, which are already quite sour, but making them slightly sweeter into it's kind of that chutney thing, letting them bubble down and burst and pop in that vinegar. It's absolutely delicious with, say, some mackerel. Prunes are wonderful pickled. Damsons are amazing. Fennel's great, really crisp and fresh. It's just all about getting that balance so it's not too harsh and not too aggressive on your palate. It's quite delicate.
Sounds lovely. So would you add sugar then to pickle it as well?
Yeah, sugar, and I add some water just to mellow it down.
So sugar, vinegar and water, and you boil it up.
It's that simple. And then if you want to, you can add spices and herbs to infuse the vinegar. But it's a really wonderful thing to do. And if you've got like tons of something.
Yeah, yeah. Especially time here now, run of beans or anything.
Oh no,
yeah.
Then you can have them in jars and actually they improve in time, which is quite a nice thing. And it's lovely looking at your shelves with these kind of amber tinted jars on them. I think it's a real sense of achievement doing something like that, you know, and on an afternoon, and then you've got all these lovely things to look at.
So you just mentioned Sky. Who are your inspirational chefs out there?
I would say some of the guys I've worked with, a guy called Duncan Bastafold, inspired me to keep going. I mean, chefing is incredibly tough. It's long, long hours. We're talking 14 to 16 hours sometimes, doubles, you know, to the stream. I've done, you know, 2 weeks of doubles. And by the end of it, you just feel like death warmed up, quite frankly. And, you know, you have to have someone strong behind you, pushing you and not letting you wanting to give up, and he was always there giving me that extra push to say, come on, pick it up, come on. And it is being tough. You do have to have someone very tough behind you, kind of giving you the old boot, but it's what drives me, definitely, looking back at it. But chefs I really admire, Stephen Williams, the head chef of 40 Maltby Street. I just love his food. He used to be the head chef of the, sous chef of the Ledbury, and I just think he's incredible. And Sky is fabulous. Angela Hartlett, she's wonderful. And there's a lot of really, really talented chefs out there these days. It's just exploded, really, to be honest.
Yeah, now, when did you decide you want to become a chef? I mean, how long ago?
I think I always knew that cooking was for me and what felt very natural. I was not necessarily hugely academic at school and struggled. I'm dyslexic, and I was very, very good at art and textiles and, you know, cooking and all those kind of things. And I'm very driven, and I always like to be the best at what I can do. So once I found my niche, I suppose, and the thing I fell in love with, it was just like,
focused. Did you go to chef school?
I went to Leith's in London
for a year. A year's course?
Yeah, I did a year.
So is that a proper chefing course? Or I thought that was like for chalet girls, or is it one up?
I mean, unfortunately, I think, I don't quite know what it's like. I went there such a long time ago now. But yeah, it's definitely got people that want to achieve different things from the end of the year. I very much knew what I wanted from it, and it has great connections. And throughout there, I was working for free, we call them stages, and just taking my knives up to kitchens saying, please can I work tonight? And most kitchens will just say yes, because we're all understaffed, we're all overworked. So it was like, yeah, of course. And I did a lot of that, and that was when I saw the atmosphere, the buzz, and I learned very visually. So seeing someone create something, watching them every move, it was just like, I knew.
So was, when you were at college, who were the chefs then that were in the media? Who was it, you know, who was everyone loving then?
I think it was still, who was it? I think people like Gary Rhodes, I think, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was many women at all back then.
No, Gary Rhodes was the
Delia
main
one. Was still very big, and she still is. Two Fat Ladies, I used to enjoy watching them. Keith Floyd, still love.
So food was
Rick Stein's.
Just bursting through,
it was.
Wasn't it?
It was just kind of just, slowly trickling.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say that was the time when it was beginning. So you've really been on a fantastic crest of a wave then.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, kind of chefs now have become slight rock stars. It's bizarre. It's like, you know, we're, at the end of the day, we're just
and
cooking
you didn't
great
know
food.
That when you started, did
no,
you?
And I didn't know that when things started happening for me. I mean, I was just cooking away in my kitchen, doing what I love doing, doing what I know how to do, and doing it the best I can possibly do. And then things suddenly started happening, and it's been such a crazy year that I didn't, you know, looking back on it, I have no recollection of kind of how it all happened or when it happened. It just did start happening.
Do you think it was the book coming out then?
Well, I think, do you know what it was? I think Polpetto started to get a really wonderful name just by people eating and enjoying the food, and people started talking and saying, oh, who is the head chef, you know, and it just slowly started trickling. I mean, I was very lucky to join Russell Norman and Richard Beatty at a time where the restaurants were something very new that was happening in London. I mean, I don't think anyone... I mean, I remember Soho at that time, and there was nothing. I mean, there was like a handful. You either paid a fortune for food or you ate really, really badly.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much in between. And now Soho's had this huge boom of these great restaurants that are owned by independent people coming through, doing... not Michelin star food, but really wonderful food at good prices in a really great, fun atmosphere. And that's what we all want.
Florence Knight, it has been brilliant to meet you today. And I can't wait to cook the chocolate and beetroot thing.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Something good. Oh, something good tonight. Made me forget about you for now.
Radio Gorgeous, we'll never let you down.